Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my friend Dylan Dotson from New City Church. New City Church, did I say that right, Dylan?
Is that right?
And so you are in Raleigh, North Carolina?
Yep.
Did I say that right?
You said that right as well.
Okay. So I've been confused of if it's Raleigh or Raleigh.
Raleigh. Yes, at least that's how I say it. So
say it again just so we can hear it right.
Raw, like R, it's R-A-L, but it's kind of like pronounced like R-A-W-L, so Raleigh.
Raleigh, like, okay, Raleigh. All right, good to know. So if you could, Dylan, give a little bit of background on who you are and who New City Church is.
Yeah, my name is Dylan. We launched New City Church in Raleigh, North Carolina, in April of this year, so we're six-ish months in, and things are going well. So I actually grew up in the area. I grew up in Cary, which is right outside of Raleigh. My wife, Christina, grew up right outside of Raleigh, like on the other side. We met in college at UNC Wilmington, which is on the coast of North Carolina. Our stories are completely different. I grew up in the church, always been a Christian. Never, ministry wasn't what I had any desire to do. That changed in college, but Christina didn't become a Christian until right before college. But anyway, we met in college, lots of stuff through a series of events. I was like, I think I want to do ministry. And we actually got married in between our junior and senior year of college. I like to tell everyone, especially when she's not around, that she dumped me twice. I like to tell people that she came crawling back both times. And so she dumped me each summer. We got together freshman year, between freshman and sophomore year, she dumped me. Between our sophomore and junior year, she dumped me. So I was like, all right, if I want to make it through the summer, we got to get married. And so the summer we were married, she was stuck at that point. But anyway, so we were like, we want to do this church plant thing. We just thought like that's where God was going to lead us. And so we were going to go to a seminary in Texas, even though Raleigh, there's Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary right where we live. But we're just like, we want to go somewhere else. We just didn't want to go back home for no bad reason. Just try something else. And then halfway through our senior year, we were part of a pretty large church in Wilmington. And the college pastor was like, hey, I'm going to plant a church. And I was like, well, I could go read about it or I could do it. And so we stayed in Wilmington. I got my master's degree online. And for two and a half years, we got to see what it was like to plant a church. It was extremely invaluable, wouldn't have traded for the world. And then a couple of years in, so a couple of years ago, now 3 or 4 years ago, for various reasons, we just felt like we were supposed to come back here. And so we came back here, got a normal job, and then did a residency. And then we launched in April. So last year, we kind of started the fundraising and building a team. And for us, I mean, church planting is really, really difficult. And I'm like, man, I can't even imagine going somewhere else that I didn't even know and starting to start from scratch because it's already hard enough, even already having some pre-built relationships. But through a series of events, God led us back here, which I think is a great, I think we just fit well. And so that's where we are. We launched in April this year and there's lots of great things. And then of course in church planting, there's lots of hard and discouraging things. But one thing I can say without a doubt that God has been extremely more faithful than I could have ever imagined. And even if you had told me now, so we're recording this in October, like October of last year, if you had told me where we are today, we'd be here today with all the things God has done. I don't just say this to be cliche, but like I 100% would not believe you. And so it's been hard, but God's been really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it is October now. You started in April. I mean, church plant is now 6 years old.
Six months old. It feels like 6 years sometimes, but yeah.
So it is in its infancy, and then we know each other personally, so you guys have a young daughter as well, so you've got a child and basically another child in this church that you are.
The other child on the way. So.
Yeah. Another on the way.
That's right.
So you don't enjoy sleep is what we've locked in. You got married at an early age. So people wonder, and I'm entrepreneurial by nature, so church planting has always intrigued me, but it has also stressed me out to just think of the overwhelming. I worked in a church for 15 years. It's hard work, and it never stops. And then to think about how to start a church from scratch. Just sounds so overwhelming. And I hear from other people in ministry and church planters that there is almost nothing more rewarding yet, at the same time, nothing more challenging than those first 2 years of planting a church. So you're 6 months in, so I don't mean to stress you about the next year and a half. But tell us, how in the world do you even start a church?
You know, what's funny is when obviously, because we're in this church plant thing, I know a lot of church planters and know a lot of guys that are starting and talk to them. And I'm like, man, when I hear a guy that's saying he's starting to raise money or starting to build a team, the first thing I think, I don't say this to discourage him, but the first thing I think is I am so glad I am not you. Like I'm, you know, like the thought of having to do this again, I was like, no way. And you know, it's, I don't want to be cliche in the sense that, like, I think a lot of times people ask, so obviously, besides God's grace, how has this happened? And I mean, I think there are some things that you do that you can, like, practically that people, that how you can gather people and raise money. But I don't, I mean, and this may not be the most helpful, but I really think as I look at guys that have in the same season, like planting season, if I have a had to shut down or weren't quite able to launch, and look at what they did, look what I did. And I don't know everything that they did and all that sort of thing, but I just look at, I'm like, there are some things that God did. Like some of the people on our team, and like we have a physical space, like we're not mobile, and how all that worked out. Like there's just some things that God did that were totally God. And I don't know, like, I'm like, I don't know how we did it. You know, so how do you plan a church? There's practical things. There's building a team. There's raising funds. There's having wise counsel. But the biggest thing I would say is that God just decided to do things that I didn't train or prepare for. And that's why we're here today. And of course, like I said, there's a lot of things we're excited about. There's things personally that are discouraging and hard and things you want to do better and see changed. But like, I think the team that I have around me, I think we're going to talk about that too, a little bit, like, you know, what's it like to be a church planter, our facility, the way God's provided financially. So we had no real big church backers financially at all. But we just had some people that were really, really, really generous and coming through, and just like literally, it's what I was saying. If you would have told me we've been here a year ago today, and actually, to be quite honest, we started building our team last February, March of 2017, in October. So it's about a year ago, October 2017. We almost quit the whole thing. And I think Christina, my wife, if she wasn't 100% on board, we probably would have, because we were just at the point where we weren't gaining traction. And I was like, I don't. And it got to the point, the reason we kept going was a lot of things that Christina said too, is that one, we felt like we're doing a good thing. Like, because we were meeting at our townhome at the time. And we're like, man, a lot of the people that are on our team and are joining this are taking steps. So what's so great about church planting is you don't only reach people far from God. It's the most effective way to do that, which is why I'm passionate about it. But also, when you plant a church, it allows believers to take ownership of the local church for the first time. So we have a lot of people who are great Christians and great believers and love Jesus, but they never take ownership for themselves. So we saw them starting to take steps. We also just thought, like, man, like, we've built a good community here. If we just stop, like, where would everybody go? And so we're like, man, if this doesn't work out, if I have to go find a job and we're just going to do this for a while, then we'll try that. But but last year, October, was really hard. And we almost quit, and God's been really faithful since then. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad you endured, and that I have followed your journey for 2 years, and then closely, obviously, over the last 6 months. And it's been cool to see a number of things come together. You are in a unique spot, and that one, when we were talking about this earlier, you have a staff, and so I'd love to hear about your staffing structure of the church. And you also have a building, which is very rare. To have a physical space that you can call your own from day one. And so I'd love to hear kind of how those two functional organizational elements of the church came together.
Yeah, and so again, a lot of the stuff was just God doing really, really great things. I feel bad for a lot of planters going, like, this is hard and I have a lot of help. So it's kind of rare in terms of all the help. I like to say that our staff, our church leadership staff per like attendee is probably one of the highest in the country, because we got so many people that are helping at the beginning. So there's me, there's a guy that does our worship and production stuff. We got a guy that does our volunteer coordinating and helps coordinate community outreach things. So that's three of us. Got a person that does Little City. So a lady that is Little City, which is our kids ministry, which she kills it. And then we've got a guy who does our, helps lead our community groups and does our administrative stuff and bookkeeping. So there's six of us, and then we've got, you know, older, wiser guys that love Jesus that are kind of the wise counsel that are helpful too. But a lot of teams, it's just a guy on your own, and maybe you have one or two guys. And me, I'm sitting here, and I've got like five people who, by the way, none of them are paid. Two of them actually now have raised their support to join staff, which I didn't ask them to do. They're just awesome, and they got onto it. And I think too, it's great because it gives other people the ability. What I said so much throughout the church planning phase is everybody wants to be part of something exciting. But very few people want to do the work to make it exciting. Like, we all look at the big churches or the big ministries and be like, I want to be like that. And one example I use, because, you know, I'm in my 20s, is Passion. So a lot of people are familiar with the Passion movement. They meet every January and they got this big thing. And well, Louis Giglio was in ministry, college ministry, for 20 years before that took off. Like, faithful ministry day after day before they had this big event. Right. And I'm like, you know, all these people that we idolize and look at that success, they didn't start out like that. It's just people being faithful. So what does it look like for us to be faithful? And so I have a lot of help, which is rare. So I feel bad when I talk to other church planners because I didn't do anything to get these people, really. They just came and were excited about it. And so that's kind of how the staffing works out, and it's awesome. Like I said, some of them raise support, some other ones are interested in it. And I would love to, as the church grows, I would hire them all in an instant, but we can't right now. But they're being faithful, which is awesome. So a lot of help that way. And then for our space, you know, there's an area in Raleigh we really wanted to be. There weren't a lot of churches at. And we were looking at schools, community centers for the randomest reasons. Nothing was working out. Right across the street from where Christine and I lived at the time, we lived in a townhome, right? We moved right into the middle of where we wanted to plant the church to try to get to know the community. And then I was working out. I was like, man, we're going to have to move outside our target area. And then I had this thought right after we literally exhausted all of our options. I was like, there's this church that I see that meets in this office park right across the street from us. And I see their sign every weekend. And I always forget to like look them up. So I immediately had this thought, where do they meet? I go on their website. The website wasn't any good. Wasn't helpful at all, but it said they were moving. And I was like, moving? So long story short, we went to the building and it's part of a little office park here. And they were moving out, right? We were looking for a space. A lot of things had to go right. Like seriously, so many things had to go right for us in order for us to get this location. And they did. And again, that was just another God thing. I mean, people being generous, we're a new organization. So people have to sign on, you know, legally to take the risk if we were to shut down. And the landlord had to be okay with us doing some construction in here. And everything worked out the way that we could have hoped. And so here we are. And so again, I feel like I have an unfair advantage in some ways, not to say it's not difficult, please don't hear that, but God's been really faithful in giving us a space that we can do a lot of things outside of Sunday, which is nice. And then a team of people who are really helpful.
I will say, having followed the journey, and one of the things I think a lot of church planners can learn from watching you, and why I believe those volunteers or staff volunteers, and those that have raised money are doing that, is because you cast a vision. And so for 2 years, you cast a vision in many different ways that is a compelling vision of a better Raleigh, and what that looks like with New City Church in the middle of that. And so I would love to hear from you. What is your vision for the church, and where do you see it going in the next 2, 3, 5 years?
Yeah, so our vision for New City Church is pretty big, and basically it's this: we want to be actively reaching 50,000 people in 25 years, which from the launch phase, that's the year 2040. And I just say two things as to why that's the case, because I know that's massive. But my caveat is, it's not that New City Church is going to be 50,000 people. It's through church planting that us and those that we've sent out together are reaching 50,000 people. Now, where will that happen? I don't know, but we want to make it happen. There's two reasons why that's our vision. One is because we know that at the end of the day, God loves his people, and he's going to move and save and rescue people regardless, like 50,000 to him. And he's going to do that to a lot more than 50,000 people over the next 25 years. So one, we're just asking that God will allow us to play a part in what he's already doing. So we're not asking God to do anything he's not already going to do. And two, man, I don't want to stand before Jesus when I die or when he comes back, whenever that happens, whatever that looks like, and look at see how awesome and amazing he is, and look at him and be like, God, I only asked you for this much, like for a small amount, and stand before him and say, you could have done so much more. Now, granted, 50,000 people sounds like a lot, but before Jesus, I mean, that's probably even not a lot, but it seems a lot like a lot to me. And so we just want to go big and do things in such a way and train up leaders and send out church plants so that we can do something big, because Jesus is big and we want to ask him for big things. If it doesn't happen, does that mean we fail? I don't think so. But I don't want to ask God to do something average, because he's not an average God. And so that's kind of a little bit of behind what our vision is and why it is what it is.
I love it. Are there any churches out there that you have followed, or pastors that you feel like are a model for where you want to lead the church?
Yeah, and this thing too, so we don't do this by ourselves. So we're part of Acts 29. It's a church plan network, for those that are, I guess, familiar. And that's part of the reason why we're part of a network, because we know we can't do this by ourselves. Like, I need wisdom and guidance and training. The people that we're going to send out need wisdom and guidance and training more than just I or one or two people can give. And so we're connected with a network. And then there's also a couple of local networks that I'm a part of here in Raleigh, just to get to know the guys in there, because there's a lot of great churches here in Raleigh. And part of the reason why we decided to stay and plant in Raleigh is because it's one of the fastest growing cities in all the United States. And I mean, even just to keep up, we need more churches just to keep up with the population growth, let alone like percentage wise, like reach more percent of the people. Yep. So relationships and key, whether that's it, and I would just say that for other people, whether it's a denomination or a network or a tribe, whatever it is, you've got to be connected with other people to help you, because especially for what we want to do, there's no way we could do it on our own. There's no way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I have a theological issue that I feel like we need to talk about. and it doesn't have to do with your connection to Acts 29. I'm going to assume you're Reformed theology. So we won't dig into that. But you do love cats, and I'm struggling with how it is that you believe that you can love Jesus and love cats, because it just seems like the two are contradictory.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the wrong profession, because I love cats and I also don't like coffee. And so, you know, people in ministry are like, what? Like, you don't drink coffee? And you're like, no, I don't, you know, I'm here to save the outcasts and the people that need Jesus. And so I'm reaching out to those people. And, but you know, the thing is about cats, I like dogs. Like if I could have a dog that had the maintenance of a cat that I don't have to walk every day, or that I can go out of town for a few days and just leave, I would get a dog, but you can't. And part of it is I grew up with a cat that was an indoor-outdoor cat. It would kill things and bring it home.
Yeah.
At the same time, she would like sit on your lap. And so she was kind of like a dog. And so she was awesome. And so that's what happened to me.
I can respect that. A cat with function.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I totally respect, like, farm cats, things like that. I get it. We won't go too deep in that. I had no idea about this coffee, though. This is like a whole other level of how do you survive a church? If you don't like coffee, how do you survive having a 18 months old, to a year, 2 years old?
Well, I don't sleep very well, just in general, and people have tried to give me different ways to get sleep better, and I just don't. I wake a bunch, and so I just tell people that I don't know what I'm missing out on. I mean, there's some mornings when I wake up and I'm like, I bet coffee would be helpful, but I just don't know. This is all I know, and so.
So do you have any kind of caffeine at all in your life?
No, not really. I just kind of.
Fascinating.
I talked to a lot of people that liked coffee later in life, and so there's still a chance.
Yeah.
At this point, I haven't. I'm like, why force myself to like something? I'm also kind of budget conscious and stingy a little bit, so let's say you save money too.
So when you joined Acts 29, did they know this about the cats and the coffee? I feel like that could be a disqualifier.
I feel like I'm pretty open about it, you know? So, maybe
it's
not.
It's out there now.
Right. Let's see. If I get a phone call, I'll know in trouble.
I'll let you deal with that as the press comes asking questions about that. Well, let's talk about social media and how that has played into your vision. How is New City Church using social media to date? How have you used it maybe even leading up to the church plan, and how are you using it strategically at this point?
It's hugely important, and we don't do it. I mean, I think we do a pretty good job. We could do better, and we're doing things to try to get better. As a small church, you only have so many people that can do stuff, and so people are still skilled in certain areas. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I think I said five or six people earlier. I'm missing one more. We do have someone that runs our social media communications, who happens to be my mom, and I always give the caveat. She's not doing it because she's my mom. She used to be the communications director for one of the largest churches here in Raleigh, and now she runs her own social media business, so she knows what she's doing. So we're really fortunate about that. But for us, man, especially, so I'm 27, so I'm on the younger side, and if we're going to reach people, like, that's where people are. A funny story. So last year, like in January, February of last year, we were just starting out getting a team and telling people what we're doing. We put it up, had Facebook stuff going away, and someone told me, they said, like, you're a while from planting, it's like starting the church. Why would you already have a website up? And to me, I just remember thinking, like, you're missing out. Like, this is where people are. This is where people gather. For me, I'm not going anywhere, especially a church, if you don't have a website. And if you have a website and you have like Facebook and you haven't posted in 2 weeks, I assume that you don't have anyone my age and you don't care about people my age, because you wouldn't. And so from the very beginning, and my mom did a great job, especially before we launched, like in the early phases, like we didn't have a lot of content, but just finding Bible verses, different things. And so from the beginning, like I always say, I think for a church plant, we do a really good job, because that's where people go. And we've got a tight budget. And so the only real marketing we've done is through Facebook. We've done some Facebook ads and things like that. And so most new people, other than word of mouth, have found us on Facebook. Some of our core launch team, some of the people that are, so our worship leader and the guy that does our Sunday coordinating, volunteer coordinating, found us on Twitter.
Okay, interesting.
We got another, the couple that are actually mayor that does our kids ministry and our finances and bookkeeping and community group leaders found us on Facebook.
They didn't. You didn't even know them before launching the church, and you found them on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, you know, of like kind of our volunteer staff, my mom, and this because we're related, is the only person, like 18 months ago, I didn't know any of these people. And it's because we were like intentional from the beginning. People found it. They are interested. Like, we got up together. And that's where people are, is people are on social media. And if we're not,
so let's dig into that practically, though, because a lot of churches are like, wait, how did they just find you on Twitter, Facebook? How does that happen?
We just followed in the beginning. We just followed a bunch of people. And so people, I think on what happened with Twitter, we don't do it so much anymore, but we did in the beginning. We just got our stuff out there. We just followed a bunch of people in our area.
Yeah.
And I think like a worship leader and the guy that they're both seminary students as well here in Raleigh, who does our Sunday coordinating. We followed them. And so they just found our stuff. And then on Facebook, it's really hard if you're to Google like church plants, like with SEO, Google AdWords, it's really hard for a new church to pop up. You're not going to find it. But on Facebook, I guess you have a little bit more chance of just typing in like a Raleigh church, whatever. And because we're so active and we have people liking our stuff, and they found us on Facebook. And they're like, again, that's the thing is, we didn't just have social media accounts, as we were active on them and using them. And so they'll tell you, the couple that found us on Facebook, our kids director and the guy that was community groups, part of the reason they joined us is because they were like, we were one of the only church plants, because they were looking for a church. They actually moved down here to help another church that didn't get off the ground. So they didn't even move down here. They moved down here for something else that didn't happen. Wow. So they were looking part of a church plant, and the ones that they found, they couldn't find anything about them online.
Wow.
Because we were active online, now here they are, and they're killing it. And so it's been hugely important, not just to reach new people, but to reach, I mean, our staff, and like, we're online. If you're not online, you're missing out. So that's how that's happening.
So, have you guys spent any money on advertising with Facebook ads or?
We have. That's really all we've done. I don't know the amount. Pre-launch, we probably spent like a couple $100, and then last 6 months, maybe a couple $100 total. I could be off a little bit there, but that's kind of all we did. We just kind of boost posting. Sometimes it's just for people that like our page and their friends. Yeah. Sometimes it's like targeted to Raleigh or just in general based on what it is. So that's really all we've done, and but because we're using it so effectively, it's been a big impact.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. So what, as from a content standpoint, what are the kind of the things that you guys are posting that's working, that's engaging people?
Yeah, and so we're really intentional. Even as a small church, I mean, people request like, hey, can you post this event? Can you post this thing for me? And we just tell people like, I know we're small, but we're very intentional about what we post, and like we just. Doesn't matter what size we are, like we're going to do. And so I think you've talked about before, I don't remember the four words that you used, like how you should do how you should do social media.
Yeah.
But that's how we kind of do it, is there's information there, the stuff that we have going on, there's relatable things, there's funny things. So we post a video, a clip or two of our message. We post some Bible verses, we post the things that are coming up, and then we post things that are like, use a GIF, because it's GIF, not GIF, for those of you.
I agree.
Just to explain something. And so it's very interactive. It's not just like information. It's not just events. It's like, you know, we post things that people are interested in and that try to help them. And so that's, and then we don't post the same thing, or we do on different platforms. We might post them at different times, but we don't just post the same thing on each one at the same time. Sure. Why would people follow you on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook if you're going to see the same thing?
Yeah. Every,
and so we do try to segment a little bit to what's appropriate on each platform.
Nice. So you, Dylan, as a pastor, have a personal platform as well. So you do a podcast outside of the church. You post, you have a blog as well. How do you, as a pastor, balance the two or differentiate the personal platform and the church platform?
Yeah, I read a book recently. Title is slipping me, but I really liked it. And it was talking about how if you're a pastor of a local church, like that should be your number one priority. It shouldn't be like building your brand and having this global influence. Like it should be the people, if you're a local pastor, that should be the number one thing that you focus on. And so for me, everything I do, I first think through the lens of, will this help our people at New City Church? And if not, at least in this season, I'm not going to do it. So even my podcast, Faith and Life Podcast, started a few months ago. The reason I did it, I was like, the whole thing about the podcast is helping people connect their faith to everyday life. And so we just interview different people and ask them what that looks like for them. Because I'm like, I want our people to be able to connect. And so it is for anyone that listens, but it's also to help our people. Things that I write on my blog, it's like, I want to help our people. And so again, I want to help others too, but I'm not going to sacrifice New City for my own gain. As a local pastor, I mean, people are, if you're ministry and if you have different roles, but as a local pastor, I don't think that's what you're supposed to do. But at the same time, your social media matters. And, you know, people have different convictions and I get that. But one of the things for me, like as a pastor, what I do is like my social media, because of what I do, is not just for me. So like, I know some guys that like won't use Twitter or Instagram or Facebook because I think it's a waste of time. Which, you know, again, if you think it's about you, it might be a waste of time. I think about Paul being all things to all people, or like even like Facebook, like, and I got to be careful about privacy settings and stuff like that. But like the things I post, like I have a lot more friends on Facebook. If I wasn't a pastor, I wouldn't, but because I want to interact with them, I want them to see what we're doing. Or Twitter, like I'll post things, I'll interact that in ways that I wouldn't if I was just trying to be concerned about myself. But I use this as a way to help try to reach more people for Jesus. So it can't just be about, I just want to be friends with my own people on Facebook, or I just want to have my own circle. I don't want to see what everyone else is doing, because if we're called to reach people, then we've got to, okay, what? How can I be missional? And that means my social media, how I use it, is probably needs to be different than the average person if I'm trying to reach more people.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, one of the things that I have suggested to pastors is that people connect to people more than they connect to organizations.
Yeah.
And so one of the values you have in having a personal platform is that you can have a personal connection with somebody before they come to your church. But I think for pastors to separate the two is really unhealthy. I don't think you can. When you're a pastor, whatever you put out there is a representation of your church that you lead, and that should be your top priority professionally. And so it is complicated and confusing, but I think we can use our personal platform to expand our ministry impact through our local church.
That's part of it too. Like I would love for some of the like social media, like my personal social media, to help grow and bring people to New City. Like that's part of how I view what I do. It's not just for me. It's like, you know, how can I use this to help New City? Cause again, that's my priority, and social media is a huge way that you can do that.
Yeah, it is a unique opportunity, but I think so many leaders don't know what to do with it and how to marry the two, so they almost just ignore it and don't utilize it.
And I heard someone say that they would go so far as to say it's selfish for pastors not to be online. I probably wouldn't go that far, because again, I get people have different convictions and maybe different places that you live, but I would say unless you have a good reason as to why you're not online, at least on some platform, then you probably need to spend more time being, what does it look like to be missional in my context? Not that you have to have like write a blog or have all these things, but you just need to be active, like connecting. Like part of it too is like, I get to see what my people are posting on Facebook or on Twitter and Instagram. Like I follow them to see what they're doing in their lives. So it helps me like lead them better. And so I feel like unless you have a good reason not to be somewhere, not to be on anything, then you should try to engage somehow.
That I'm with you. I don't know that I think that statement is strong to say but I do think that my biggest takeaway from this conversation is that if a church is not active on social media and on Instagram or Facebook or whatever the platform might be, it's communicating to a generation where you're not important to us.
Yeah,
and so if you don't have a website and you just expect people to show up because you got a billboard outside of your building, that's not going to happen.
I mean, that's everything.
They see the billboard and Google you, and if you're not on Google, and then from Google, they're going to go, or their website, they're going to go to social media, and if you're not active there, they're probably going to check out and find the
church. We go places primarily two reasons. One, personal invite, so that's good. But even with a personal invite, you're likely, like a restaurant or anything, you're still going to go online before you go, most likely.
Yes.
So if you're not online, then you what you're communicating is we don't care about you. And so, yeah, it is a passion of ours, which is why we think it's a big deal, because we care about people. So we need to be where they are.
Yeah. So Dylan, if there are any church planters that are listening to this podcast, any advice you would give to them specifically around social media?
Yeah. I mean, create it. I mean, you don't have to be great everywhere. And even if that means you're posting the same thing, like once a day on each one, I think that's better than nothing. I mean, obviously we're fortunate because we have someone who is really good at this, but even if we didn't, we would still be doing this. I would spend more time doing it. I would find someone, because you know, we've got people at our church that could do it, maybe not as well, but if you're terrible at it, then find someone else to do it. If you're busy, like obviously you're busy, you're trying to plant a church. This is one of the things that you should be spending your time doing, because again, if you want to reach people, again, like for me, like if I was to look at a church, I mean, yeah, you want their social media to do well, but more than that, you want to see them being active. And if you're a brand new church plant trying to reach people and you haven't posted something in 3 weeks, it makes me seem like you don't have anything going on, that you don't care. So even if it's not like the best images or the best that, like, just say something, like, let me know you're around and you're here. And so whether that's you or someone else, but man, social media is not the most important thing. Like, you got to be meeting people. You got to be leading them in Bible studies or whatever you're doing, but it's got to be somewhere, or you're not going to, probably going to have a hard time reaching people, especially people 30 and younger.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I've got one last question before we wrap up. You've had an online campus from day one, and you've been Facebook living your services with the Mevo camera from the beginning. I would love to hear what you're learning and experiencing from that doing.
Right. That's the question, is like, do we even live stream? Because some people say, unless you have a great setup, don't do it. All we have is the Mevo. We're trying to. I mean, budgetary reason makes it difficult. I'm hoping by the end of the year we'll have like a real camera and do something like that. We Facebook Live our messages because it's a Mevo camera, which, if you don't know what it is, you have to put it kind of up close. It's not like the best thing ever. We only put it on Facebook, so we don't put it online. Like, we don't put the video online because it's not high quality. But it allows people. We have this one lady who lives probably an hour or two away that someone in our church knows, who doesn't go to church, and she watches us every single week. And she comments, I'm here. Right. And I think too, it's like, I think one of the cool things about it too is it allows people to get to know you a little bit. Because unfortunately, or not, it just, what it is, what it is. Most churches, especially churches that have been around for a while, they have really good websites. They've got their messages online. And so you can kind of get a feel. Facebook Live, at least allows people to get a feel of who we are, what our preaching's like, kind of what our auditorium looks like a little bit. And so it really helps people see, because they don't just want to hear, they want to see. And so we don't have the best setup, but we're doing it until we get a legitimate camera. And so that, when we started, I think I even reached out to you before we did. I was like, is it worth doing even if we don't have the greatest setup? And you said yes. And so we went with it. And we do it every week. We just put our messages online, and it's not the best quality ever. It's not terrible. If it was terrible, we wouldn't do it. But it just is another way for people to get to know us a little bit, I feel like, before they come in. So.
And having watched on the outside, you've gotten better as you've done it. You've taken what you've got and you've improved. And now when you get another camera, you'll be that much more ready to utilize.
And that's the thing too. So we've kind of moved the setup around a little bit to get a better shot. But also we know what we want, because we already know what we want to do once we get the camera and the audio equipment. But we would be starting from scratch if we weren't even doing the Mevo. It's helped us at least know where we want to go once we get everything ready to go. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one of the, and this is a side note of a new trend in media, is Vimeo just acquired Livestream and is offering live streaming now through Vimeo. So I think this is a new church opportunity for churches to live stream in an even easier way. Mevo made it really easy with Facebook Live.
Right.
I think churches need to be utilizing Facebook Live as their primary live streaming.
Mevo is better than a camera, and so that's nice. And it's just all you need is a camera too. So.
Yes.
Super easy to do.
I mean, it's kind of
a phone. Excuse me. It's better than a phone.
Phone.
And all you need is a phone to get it going. You don't need a big setup. So
that's right. I think you start with an iPhone or a smartphone. You move to a Mevo, and then you move to like a DSLR. You move to some kind
of. That's actually what we did. We did a couple weeks with the iPhone, and then we're like, this is really good. So we got the Mevo, and then we'll be moving from there. Hopefully, some point in the near future. So.
So I'm hearing a lot of recommendations. I'm not a camera guy, but a Panasonic G7 is what I'm hearing is the best kind of affordable camera for churches. If you watch what Justin Dean with that church does, I believe he's using the G7. Justin, if you're listening, you could correct me on social media, and I'll share it out. But I think there's some, you know, I think it's like $500-$600.
You know, and I could be completely wrong because I'm not the guy in charge of it, but I'm pretty sure that's the camera that we're looking at getting.
Nice.
I know it's a Panasonic, so that actually, I think it's like a $500 or $600 price point. So that's
fine. I mean, it used to be so expensive to get into this space, and it just isn't anymore. So I think the excuses are gone, but the fact that you guys have been using the Mevo, and then you'll find other uses for the Mevo too. It's a good asset for the church. But I love that you guys have jumped into it, utilizing it, and you're seeing, even if it's just one person that's not going to church because they weren't otherwise going to church, but I have a feeling there's a lot more ministry that's happened through that Facebook Live that you're not even aware of. Dylan, thanks so much for taking the time and processing through this. If people want to connect with you and learn more about the church, where can they go?
Yeah, I mean, our website for New City, it's newcityrdu.com, Raleigh-Durham area, newcityrdu.com, Facebook, New City RDU. All of our social media, if you're just a church planner and you're just interested, like, what does it look like? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, newcityrdu. It's all the same. So you can kind of get ideas there. Personally, DylanDotson.com is my blog. Dylan J. Dotson is all my social media. It's all the same. And then the other podcast is called the Faith and Life Podcast, so people can look at that if they want to. So,
all right. Well, we'll have links to all those things in the show notes, so go check that out. Follow Dylan on social media and go check out the church. Check out their social media. Watch what they're doing. And no, this is volunteer driven. Obviously, your mom is a pro, but this is done.
And with that, real quick. So, like, we're getting into Instagram stories and trying to get other photographers. So we're trying to build from the beginning a team of people have like greeters and parkers, like a social media volunteer team. We're getting that from the very. We're trying to figure that out as well. So
that's awesome, and that's going to happen more and more. So as you're growing this, and if you're looking for church to model after, New City Church is a great model of a church from day one prioritizing social media and maximizing this platform to grow their church. Thanks, Dylan, for joining us.
Thank you, Nils.